As a business owner, things are really hard right now. It doesn't matter what kind of business you run, we're all looking for the right financial support to help us find a way. From the bread makers and the risk takers to the B&B owners and the work from homers, the hopheads and tech-led, break of dawners and midnight oilers, the British Business Bank, backed by UK government, is here to help you find a way. Get started by searching British Business Bank to access financial information that could help your business.
This is LBC, from Global, leading Britain's conversation, Mystery Hour, with James O'Brien.
Oh, that's nice, isn't it? Do you know what? I jumped in the River Thames yesterday. I just got a tweet telling me to, so I thought, I'm joking. I went paddling. I bought a kayak, I mentioned it earlier. I went paddling up near Windsor, near Runnymede. It's beautiful up there, absolutely gorgeous. And that's what I felt like just then when Mystery Hour started. It was like a refreshing change. Oh, that's nice. We can stop examining the slow withering of British democracy. We can stop worrying about the imminent demise of the Union. We can stop focusing upon the madness just on the horizon when we probably still won't be out of the coronavirus crisis and the Brexit brouhaha kicks in. But Mystery Hour provides us with a little bit of light relief. If you don't know how this works, allow me to tell you. People ring in with questions. At the moment, they tend to be under the age of 13, which has been rather jolly, and then other people ring in with answers. That's it, actually. We should copyright this, seriously, before someone else comes up with the same idea. 4 minutes after 12 is the time. If you hear somebody ask a question to which you know the answer, then 03456060973 is the number you need. If we're satisfied with your qualifications, and don't worry, qualifications do not have to be academic. You could just say, for example, oh, I saw it on the telly last night, James. And I will go, excellent, here's a round of applause. Or you could say, I have 8 PhDs in relative subjects. And I would say, oh, excellent, have a round of applause. So do you see what I mean? Don't say something that's completely not linked to the question that you've just answered. So I say, what are your qualifications for answering that question about astrophysics? And you say, oh, well, I have my Bag of Gymnastics Award 4, James. And I say, that doesn't really help me believe you. So all that qualifications are designed to do in the context of Mystery Hour is help me decide whether or not you're telling the truth. And obviously, if you are one of my many, many Mystery Hour listeners who's under the age of 14, even I'm not going to accuse you of yanking my chain live on the radio. I don't think you will be ringing up to swing the lead, so to speak. So it will probably be confined to adults. But I still want to know what the children's qualifications are, just to reassure myself that they didn't dream the answer. Okay, are we clear? Should we crack on? Do we need anything else? We try to avoid all forms of Googling, obviously, because then this would be the most pointless exercise in the history of radio, apart from the other 14 hours of the week that I do with you. That would just make a mockery of it. If someone rang in and said, what is the capital of Libya? And you could just Google it, then what would be the point of doing it on the radio? So I could go off on a pompous spiel at this point. Would you like a pompous spiel? What do you mean you've already had six today? Well, okay, well, I won't go off on a pompous spiel then, but it was conceived, Mystery Hour, as a way of filling an hour on a day when there was an election and we weren't allowed to rubbish. It was conceived as a way of celebrating education, illumination and elucidation, i.e. knowledge, which for my generation was really important. But for the younger generations, given the access that they have to all human knowledge on at their fingertips, is a slightly different proposition. 6 minutes after 12 is the time. Should we start? I think we will. Sophia is in Harlow. Sophia, do you have a question or an answer for me?
A question.
Carry on.
Okay. I would like to know how many stars are there in the galaxy and how do we know that?
In the universe?
Yes.
Oh, I know this. Right, do you want me to tell you?
Yes, please.
The answer is 11, and I know because I counted them. So, are you happy with that answer, Sophia?
Yes.
What? You think there are only 11 stars in the whole universe?
I was just being sarcastic.
You're a star. That was brilliant. And I will. I'll start. Shall I stop being a big idiot and try and get you a proper answer now?
Yes, please.
Yeah, you weren't being sarcastic then, were you? Let's get an answer. Well done. How many stars in the whole universe and how do we know? I don't even know if that question is possible to answer, but the least we can do is try. Eric is in Maidenhead. Eric, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on, Eric.
Why do some animals have the name dragon in it, like dragonfly or Komodo dragon?
Well, I mean, I think we can work this one out, can't we? Have you ever seen a Komodo dragon?
No.
Do they like dinosaurs?
Yeah.
So like giant lizards. So I think they look like dragons. It's the really short answer. And dragonflies look like dragons with wings. So it's no big mystery here. It's just that they look like dragons.
What about the dragon snake? There's also an animal called the dragon snake.
Oh, you said dragonfly and Komodo dragon, Eric. You can't just bring snakes into it like that because my answer might not be quite as good as I thought it was in the first place. I'm going to have a... Do you mind if I have a look at a picture of a dragon snake and then I can decide whether or not it looks like, you know, like mythical representations of dragons or
sure.
not?
No, I don't mind.
Thank you. It's got a ridged back, hasn't it? It's got like you know how most snakes. You know how most snakes are smooth.
Yeah.
The dragon snake has got like a really scaly back. You know, like bumpy, like we
yeah.
think. So I imagine that's because that's what we thought dragons look like. But I will leave it. It's up to you. Are you going to accept my answer, or do you want to wait for someone cleverer?
They're just
queuing up to give me a coating today. If my kids are listening to this, they're going to be loving it. All right, Eric, thanks for nothing. Why do we call dragonflies Komodo dragons and indeed dragon snakes? Why do they have the name dragon in their descriptions? And how many stars are there in the universe? Sophia sort of sneaked in a supplementary there, which you're not usually allowed on how do we know, but given that I don't think we do know, I don't think we'll actually need to trouble ourselves with the question of how we know the thing that I don't think we do. You can't, because stars come and go all the time, don't they? Stop talking about space, James. You always make a fool of yourself. And this time it's children who are laughing at you. Phoebe is in Cambridge. Phoebe, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on, Phoebe.
How deep can you dig a hole before it gets too hot?
Wow, you mean before you get to the sort of molten crust at the Earth's core? Or lava or something like that?
Yes.
Yes. You don't mean you just got too hot. You don't just mean you got too hot because you're tired from all that digging and you've got really sweaty.
No.
Not sure. How old are you, Phoebe?
6.
6 years old. What's the biggest hole you've ever dug? How deep have you gone?
Really deep.
And how hot was it?
Not that hot.
Oh, OK. Well, let's try and find out. It's a brilliant question, Phoebe. It really is one of the best we've ever had. How deep can you dig a hole before the heat would become unbearable from the Earth's core or something? If you think you're bad on space, mate, wait till you get onto geology. Owen is in Maidenhead. Owen, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on, Owen.
Why aren't animals still evolving today?
They are. You just can't see it because it happens over such a long, 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 long period of time.
Like, here's an example. So we've evolved from chimpanzees.
Not exactly, no, but carry on.
Yeah, I know, but we've evolved from monkeys.
Well, we've evolved...
So why haven't monkeys evolved into us by now?
That's two questions. I'll explain the second bit and then I'll give you the answer to the first bit. So the answer to the first bit is simply we are still evolving. And I'll tell you a story about moths in Manchester in a minute that proves it. It's a brilliant story. But that we're not actually evolved from chimpanzees. Chimpanzees and humans have both evolved from a common ancestor. So that was where the evolution kicked in. The branch went off in two different directions. So do you see what I mean? So so evolution happens when a organism is born that has a mutation in its genes, i.e. something different, not wrong or right or better or worse, but just different from all the other organisms born to identical parents, the same species. So it might be if you were a bird and you were born with a slightly longer beak than all your brothers and sisters, then, and that beak helped you get the really juicy stuff out of the middle of a flower, then you would have more children than your brothers and sisters because you had a better diet and you were healthier and stronger and you lived longer. And all of your children had longer noses, longer beaks than your brothers and sisters' beaks. And so eventually, over thousands or millions of years, that bird evolves in a way that all birds born in that species have longer beaks.
So it takes
so long for this to happen. But in Salford, in the 19th century, or possibly even in the early 20th century, something really interesting happened. When you now imagine if you were a moth, Owen. Can you imagine being a moth?
Yeah, right. Having to live on clothes.
Yeah. Well, no, an outdoor moth, a moth that lives out in the woods, right? And the moth's enemy is a bird. It might even be the bird with the long beak that we were just talking about. And the bird is flying around looking for a moth to eat, okay? Now, you are a white moth on a grey building. How well hidden do you think you are from that bird?
Not very well.
Bingo, you just got eaten. So what happened was, in Salford or Manchester, not that long ago, and this is what's so interesting about it, because it usually takes millions of years, but this one happened at breakneck speed. A moth got born to white moth parents, but this moth was grey. And all the buildings, I may be getting this slightly wrong in the context of the Industrial Revolution, but the point was that the moth that could camouflage itself when all the factories were belching smoke out, it changed colour. The species of moth changed colour because the grey mutation allowed it to hide on the chimneys where it would previously have been seen because it was white. And it happened incredibly quickly because all of the white moths got eaten and all of the ones born grey survived long enough to have children and then more baby moths and more baby moths until all of the moths being born in that species, even though the species hadn't changed, it had changed colour. And that was evolution. Or also, they call it survival of the fittest. And fittest doesn't mean they can run fast or lift heavy weights. It just means they are best suited or best fitted to the environment around them.
Oh, okay.
Is that a good answer or what?
No, that's a perfect answer.
And you, my friend, are a perfect caller. Have a round of applause. Don't at me with the corrections to the moth stuff. It worked, all right? It did the job it was designed to do. What a brilliant question. And yeah, brilliant answer. He's right.
This is LBC Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
And 17 after 12 is the time. I wonder what mystery you would need to have solved or you would like to have solved. Why do creatures like dragonflies and Komodo dragons and dragon snakes, why do they have the word dragon in their names? I think there's an open goal there if you've never got yourself a mystery hour round of applause before. How deep would you have to dig a hole before it got too hot to handle? 0345 6060973. How many stars are there in the universe? And was there one other as well? I think we've covered the others as well. Let's go to Aisha, who's in Hayes. Aisha, do you have a question or an answer for me?
Question.
Carry on.
When an adult's kidnapped, why is it still said to be kidnapped when there's no kids involved?
That's a really good question, but I think the answer's quite boring. Which is that it does describe children being taken away because that's where the word was coined, and then it just got applied also to adults being snatched away as well. So there's no really exciting or complicated answer to your question. It's a bit like, have you ever heard the phrase taking candy from a baby?
Yeah.
So if you were to be playing your dad at Mario Kart, yeah? And you bet him, I don't know, 5 packs of Haribo that you'd beat him.
Yeah.
And then you absolutely destroyed him because he's so rubbish at Mario Kart.
Yeah.
And then he gave you the 5 packets of Haribo and you said, this is like taking candy from a baby. Your dad wouldn't actually be a baby, would he?
No.
So kidnap applied to children when it was first coined, when the phrase was first used. But as the word developed and as it got used more and more, it also applied to essentially taking adults away against their will.
Okay.
It's not a brilliant answer, but it unfortunately is the correct one.
Yeah.
Do you want to share the round of applause? Shall we share it?
Yeah.
Let's share the round of applause. Half for me, please, Keith. Half for Aisha. Thank you very much. Carry on. I'm kind of answering a couple today. Generally, I get things 100% correct, always. Very, very occasionally, I may make a small error or boo-boo, in which case you're welcome to ring in and request a steward's inquiry. I can't quite imagine that happening yet. 20 minutes after 12 is the time. Raphael is in Bushy. Raphael, question or answer?
Question.
All right, mate. Let's do it.
So, why is a hen do and a stag do called a hen do and a stag do? Because they're different species.
They
why
are.
Isn't it a hen and a rooster or a stag and a doe?
Phew. I'm glad you went with rooster there, Raphael, because there were a few choices on the table and you definitely selected the correct one. Are you already... What are you going to do for your stag do? Are you making plans already at the moment?
No, I just wanted to know the answer of it.
All right, sorry. So I'm just trying to do a bit of banter, Raphael, trying to, you know, get the old listening figures up with a bit of friendly exchange. I like the question a lot. Why are they? Why is it not stags and does and hens and roosters? So we need the origin of both, don't we? Why is it called a hen night and why is it called a stag night? You leave it with me. 0345 60 60 973 is the number that you need. I said it before and I'll say it again. These questions are better than the grown-ups usually manage. 21 minutes after 12 is the time. Angela is in Letchworth. Angela, question or answer?
Answer.
OK. Let's do it.
OK, it's for the young lady that had that brilliant question about the hole and how deep you'd have to go before it got too hot.
Yes.
So, basically, as you go down, as you dig a hole,
yes,
you won't necessarily notice it straight away, but the temperature does go up slowly, and that's something called the geothermal gradient. So, adults can remember geothermal gradient, kids just need to know it gets hotter as you go down.
Yes.
And remembering off the top of my head, I think there's a bit of a global average that is, and I could be wrong, but the number in my head is 25 degrees centigrade is the increase for every kilometre that you go down.
Right.
Now, it's different in different sort of environments.
Of course it is.
For
example, up a hill.
Yeah. I mean, it would depend on how big the hill is, obviously.
Yeah,
you
but
know,
it's next to a valley. It's
in.
Next to a valley, so you're going to have different thermal gradients from the top of the hill to the bottom
exactly,
of the valley.
Exactly, and rock type
knocking
as
it out
well.
Of the park today.
Whether or not
cool, yeah, rock type, big,
whether
big
or not
thing.
There's rift systems nearby as well.
Yeah.
Buried
track,
yeah,
no. So 25
degrees.
Yeah.
Hole of a kilometre.
Right.
It's 25 degrees. Your temperature increases by 25 degrees.
That's pretty hot.
If you dig 2 kilometres, yeah. If you dig 2 kilometres, it gets to 50. Now.
That's really hot.
Bring in a bit of biology.
Yeah.
50 degrees is 10 degrees higher than 40, obviously. At 40 degrees centigrade, that's when enzymes start to denature. So you start to get a lot of problems if you go above that temperature and you don't have any adequate cooling. So that's the point there. So you can get to nearly 2 kilometres, and that's when it gets to this temperature here. Now, if you're a human going around in a 2 kilometre hole, you'd be okay. Our bodies are built to cool themselves down. But yeah, so for each kilometre above that, the temperature goes up by 25 degrees. And I think the deepest hole we've managed to dig with a drill is about 4 kilometres.
Wow, that's a brilliant answer. What are your qualifications?
I have a degree in geology and I've got some postgrad earth science.
That'll do. Can I ask you a silly question?
Yes.
How, I mean, in all things being equal, so in an average laboratory condition, if I was digging with, if I had a thermometer in my spade, how far would I have to dig before I saw a change in my thermometer? Just a tiny one.
Well, if you're just going for the simplistic answer, probably enough to get like a couple of degrees change. So, so a kilometre gives you 25 degrees. So half a kilometre will give you 12 and a half.
I could have done this.
A quarter of a kilometre.
I'll give you
so
6 and a quarter.
250, whatever it is.
Metres.
Noughts, yeah.
6 and a quarter.
That would give you 6.
So 125 metres gives you 3 1/8. 62
yeah,
and a half
so,
metres gives you what? About 62 metres, 60 metres or so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
look at this.
We're like
Holmes and Watson, Angela. Look at this. We're solving science problems live on the radio.
Well, it could be stuck in before as well.
Yes.
So mines can be quite cool because whilst obviously there's the geothermal gradient, rocks are actually pretty poor conductors of heat.
Right.
So that's why most kind of like caves and mines and that sort of thing
can be cooled down.
Cool. So if it's anything sort of surface level, you're probably not going to notice it. But yeah, if you go really deep, that's when you're going to start noticing it.
Beautiful stuff. Round of applause for Angela, please. a few objections to my taking candy from a baby simile. But the point was that the word baby there, not the word flipping take, that's a verb. I can't believe I have to explain this. It's only the grown-ups that are complaining. All the children understood it immediately. And we're on a similar, I like to think we see the world similarly. You know, we're as yet, me and my listeners under the age of 14, we're unsullied by adult concerns. We have a purity and an innocence that I know many people find very beguiling. So we know that that was a brilliant answer to the question about kidnapping, but some of the crusty old geezers listening have got a problem with it. So I'll explain, okay? The point was that the word kid and the word baby serve the same purpose in those words. Kidnap, you don't have to be a kid. Taking candy from a baby, you don't have to be a baby. You see? Thank you. Farah is in Waltham Forest. Farah, do you have a question or an answer for me?
Question.
Carry on, Farah.
So why don't cats like water?
You mean when they get sprinkled with it or when they get near it? Because they quite like to drink it, don't they?
Yeah.
Could you tell your mother to stay out of proceedings, please, Farah? We're having a very important conversation together at the moment and we don't need any interferences or disturbances. Am I right or am I right?
Yeah.
Exactly. So why don't cats like water? Could it be because they can't swim?
Maybe.
I'm just trying to think because oddly, one of my cats actually quite likes water. He kind of comes into, when I get out of the bathroom in the morning, he comes in and hops in the shower and starts licking up all the water that's left. And he's got water in his bowl, Farah. We feed him. It's not like we starve him, but he prefers that one. That means he gets his paws wet and his fur wet, but the other one runs a mile at the very sides of water. So we will find out why don't cat. Do you have a cat?
Yeah.
What's he called?
Coco.
What an amazing name for a cat. Nice. And Coco doesn't like water?
No.
Right, well, let's find out. Why don't cat? How old are you, Farah? Because I think you might be the winner this week.
What? 5.5.
Five and a half. Can you guess how old I am?
25.
A little bit higher.
60?
Tiny bit lower.
Forty-five.
Oh, so close. 48, but you know you missed out the most important bit, Farah. 48 and a half. Thank you very much. Let's get you an answer. Why don't cats like water? We need to know. 0345 606 0973. Bakari is in Croydon. Bakari, question or answer?
Hello, James.
Hello, mate.
I have a question for you.
Good man.
My question is, who or and when had the idea of democracy? So who had the idea for democracy and when did it come to be?
The Greeks claim that they invented it. I'm not going to pass that off as an answer because quite often when you say things like that, someone rings in and says, actually, I think you'll find it was the Sumerians in 4000 BC. But I'm generally, the Greeks invented the word. So does that answer your question?
Kind of.
So it's the rule, demos is the people and krasi is in rulers. So aristocracy or theocracy or, you know, so the rule of the people would be a Greek invention, although not every person got a vote in ancient Greece. You had to be a man and I think you had to be a property owner so you'd be going back, you know, thousands rather than hundreds of years. And Greece is called the cradle of democracy. So I think that's probably the answer, but I don't know if it's detailed enough for you to act for a person of your perspicacity to accept this answer.
I'm not sure. Maybe. No. I think it is a good answer, though.
Okay.
I understand. Yeah, I think.
But I haven't got the when. You said when. You didn't say where.
Yeah.
I gave you the when. You wanted the where. Frankly,
yeah,
we want the when. We don't want the where. We got the where. We know that we don't know the where. Okay, it's on the board. Bakari, what a brilliant question. Democracy. When? When? 0345 606 0973. I mean, in a way, what Bakari is asking is when was the first election? Actually, when was the first election? It's a great question. Bill Overton is here now with the headline.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
It is 33 minutes after 12, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we continue with Mysteria, searching for answers. There's an interesting, well, it's heartbreaking, but it's so predictable. How many different ways can you say, I told you so? How can I spend the rest of my career saying, I told you so? I can't. I've got to find new ways to do it. Michel Barnier speaking on the state of EU trade negotiations. You'll remember that they were going to reach an agreement by July, I think, said Boris Johnson, after he said that it would be done and dusted by 2019, which was before he said that he had an oven-ready deal. Anyway, it ain't going to happen. Chief Brexit negotiator saying that over the past few weeks, the UK has not shown readiness to find solutions in trade talks. But it doesn't matter what he says, because you can open up Rupert Murdoch's newspapers tomorrow and it will all be the fault of the other fella. May catch up with Ben Kentish when that speech concludes and just get the gist of it, because I'd hate to misrepresent anything by suggesting that they're probably stuck on fish. The fools. Back to Mysteria. And my goodness, isn't it welcome at the time. So we've done the digging a hole. We've done the evolution. Why is it a stag do and a hen do when they are of different species? Why don't cats like water? When was the first election? Why are Komodo dragons and dragonflies and dragon snakes? Why do they have dragons in their name? And how many stars are there in the entire universe? 03456060973. Aniela is in Hammersmith and Fulham, it says here, which is a bit vague, but it's good enough for me. Aniela, do you have a question or an answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Why is it called Greenland if it's white and covered with ice?
It's a great question. Are you sure it is white and covered in ice? Because there's two answers to this.
I'm sure.
Okay, I'll take that answer from you. So some people think it's called Greenland because it was actually green. That is one of the answers, but it's not the one I like. Do you know the one I like?
No.
No, well, it'd be a bit weird if you did, wouldn't it, frankly?
Yes.
Now, here's the question. Can you think of a good name for a Viking?
I don't know.
Well, come on. What's the most famous name of a Viking ever?
I'm not too sure.
I'll give you a clue. Rhymes with Derek.
Merrick?
Nearly. Derek without a D.
I don't know.
Eric! Eric the Viking!
Oh!
Eric! Right, so there was a Viking called Eric. He wasn't known as Eric the Viking. That would be stupid because all his mates were Vikings as well, and it wouldn't really make him stand out from the rest of the Vikings. So he was known as Eric the Red, right?
Yes.
And Eric the Red, the story varies. There are various different versions of it. But here's what they reckon might have happened, and that you're going to love this. It's one of the best questions we've ever had. So Eric the Red fell out with a lot of the other Vikings. And he decided to settle somewhere else. And what he wanted to happen, he wanted to get a message back to Norway, because in terms of modern countries, he was Norwegian. And he didn't want his enemies to chase him. He wanted them to live or to go somewhere else. So he described icy place as Greenland in the hope that all the other Vikings would head in that direction and leave him alone. I think he might have actually been in Iceland, which is greener than Greenland, if you're not confused enough already. So the main reason why Greenland is called Greenland, despite the fact that it's not green, was like a medieval marketing campaign to persuade other Vikings to go that way, where everything was green, instead of going that way.
Okay, thank you.
You're very well. That's a good one, that, isn't it?
Thank you.
Can you remember what the Viking's name was?
Eric.
Well, that's why we're going to share this round of applause. Thank you, Aniela. And if that's not true, then frankly, I prefer my version. I think it is true, incidentally. Hallie is in Burnham. Hallie, question or answer? Burnham-on-Sea or Burnham Market?
No, what? Burnham in Somerset.
Burnham-on-Sea. Carry on. That's what I thought, yes. Yeah. Question or answer, Hallie?
Answer.
Carry on.
I'm about the one about the stars in the universe.
Do you spell your name like the comet?
Yes.
Well, what a magnificent qualification that is to answer this astronomy question.
Okay, I'll take that.
What have we got?
Right. We can't tell how many stars there are in the whole universe.
No.
Because the universe is expanding.
Right.
And we can only see stars whose light can actually reach us in a certain time because it travels at a set speed.
Right.
So there are stars that are bound to be outside our possible view.
Got it.
So we, stars that have gone too far away for us to ever see them.
What about in our own galaxy?
In our own galaxy, yes. We
because that
know.
Might be the question she asked, and I was
I
too...
I think that is what she asked.
I was too sick to realise, wasn't I, Ali?
Now, that it, we do know that.
Yes.
I don't know it off the top of my head, and I'm not allowed to look things up. But the Hubble telescope has found this... You look it up quite easily.
Mm.
It is a known fact. I just can't remember the number now. Sorry about that.
No, that's all right. Do we know how they count them?
No.
But you think you know that they can?
I know they do. I mean, the thing is that they can take photographs of them, of the galaxy.
So we could find out how many stars
there are
in our galaxy.
Work them out. It's a bit complicated.
Well, what would you do? Would you take?
Yeah,
would you take a photograph of a section and then times it by the number of sections or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But then you'd have to do different sections because the galaxy is different in different places. I mean, we have a thick middle which has got lots of dust in it. And then it's thinner as it comes around the outside. And there are spiral arms. Our sun sits in one of the spiral arms.
Qualifications?
I did an OU course, and I do a lot of astronomy courses with my U3A, which means I have to keep up to date.
I'll do nicely. And were you named after the comet?
No. Oh. It's a nickname.
Oh, all right. Sorry. I thought we'd have a nice moment there, Hallie.
No, I'm actually a Harriet.
Oh, okay. Hallie Shaw for Harriet. I've never come across that before. Oh, lovely. Would you like a round of applause?
I would love one, thank you, Jane.
Well, here you are, Hallie, with my compliments.
Thank you.
Lovely answer. I mean, she wanted to know how many stars there are, but I mean, you've given her the tools she needs to find out. Just join the Open University. 20 minutes to one is the time. Ivor is in Greenwich. Ivor, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on, Ivor.
Why do only humans and apes have opposable thumbs? Why can't cats and dogs?
You put me in a slightly difficult position here because it's not just humans and apes that have opposable thumbs. Some bears have opposable. I think some frogs do. Koala bears have opposable thumbs, you know, and pandas.
Wow, I didn't know that.
No, I mean, I only found out relatively recently when one of my children asked me a similar question to what you just asked me. I think some birds kind of have, you wouldn't call it a thumb, would you? But it'd be like an opposable claw. So, does that answer your question?
Yes, it kind of does.
Well, there you go then. Do you want to share a round of applause?
Yes, please.
Cool. Actually, you can have three quarters of that one, Ivor. I'll just keep a quarter because I'm being quite greedy today. And you know, why does any animal have an opposable thumb? I suppose the answer would be evolution, to be really simplistic about it. But, the koala bear was the surprise for me. If you think about it, you see a koala bear eating, it makes sense that they've got an opposable thumb. But anyway, onwards and upwards. Alexandra is in Ruislip. Alexandra, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
So... why do cats not like it when they get wet?
Yeah.
It's because their fur gets heavy and it, like, confuses them because their balance is different.
Qualifications?
I want to be a vet.
And you just looked it up once you studied it or you found out?
Well, I kind of guessed, to be honest.
Oh.
I mean, I have a cat. But
yeah, I do too. But I
don't really have fur.
What? You've got a cat with no fur?
Yes.
Doesn't it get cold?
We keep it inside.
Yeah, well, how does its balance sort of work out then? Well, it's got great balance if it's got no fur at all.
Yeah.
I've got a bit of a problem here because I want to give you a round of applause because you sound very clever, but you have just guessed. Why would a dog's balance not be affected by getting wet? Dogs love jumping in rivers.
Because they don't, like, really jump that high.
So they're not... they don't spend their life up trees and climb up places, so the balance isn't as important for a dog because it very rarely leaves... So I tell you what, you're very good, Alexandra. You've got yourself a round of applause. And do you want to know something else weird?
Yes.
Did you hear me talking about my cat? That quite likes... I've got a cat that doesn't mind getting wet. But what I didn't say, I've got two cats. Now, they're brothers, but one's got long hair and one's got short hair. And the short-haired one is the one that sometimes jumps into the shower and starts trying to drink the water from the bottom of the shower tray before it goes down the plug hole, which means he doesn't mind getting wet. But the long-haired one never ever does that. And actually, your theory would make a bit more sense, wouldn't it? Because if the longer the hair, the bigger the problem with getting wet for a cat.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, Alexandra, I think you've gone and done it. When are you expecting to qualify as a vet? By Christmas?
Maybe.
Yeah, OK. Well, good luck. Anyway, here's a round of applause to put in your trophy cabinet.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Oh, lovely answer. I hope it's true. Charlie's in Epsom. Charlie, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Why are jumpers, as in clothes, called jumpers?
Because there ain't no jumping involved. That's why you want to know.
Yeah.
Now, again, I think I know this. And it's like a lot of words that don't make much sense to us don't make much sense to us because that's not actually what the word used to be. So if you went back into the really olden days, certainly in Scotland and I think in England, then you would be able to wear something called a jupe, a juper, J-U-P-E. And then over the years, for reasons I don't know the answer to, that word has evolved into the word jumper.
Okay.
Charlie, I'm not going to lie to you, my friend. You don't sound very impressed with that answer. I mean, that's etymology, that is. Live on the radio. The root word for a jumper is a juppa or a jupe, a jup. I don't know how you pronounce it. J-U-P-E. Is that good enough for you?
Yeah.
Are you sure? You don't have to be polite.
Yeah.
I can take it. I can take it if you think that's rubbish. If you think that's rubbish, say, James, that's a bit rubbish. Can you try and get me a better answer, please?
It might be.
I shall leave it on the board then. Why are jumpers called jumpers? 0345 6060 973.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
The Prime Minister is in Scotland, but unlike David Cameron, who went on a charm offensive, his message is you need us. Do they?
Sheila Fogarty on LBC. Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:48 is the time. One mystery we can't solve, of course, we've been trying for the best part of 4.5 years now, is what are the tangible benefits of Brexit? If you can, I'll tell you what, you can solve that one. You can come into the studio and do the show yourself. That would be a magnificent moment in Mystery Hour's history. But given that we've dedicated more hours of this programme to that question than any other over the years we spent together, I would be rather surprised if you could step up to the plate. But I do want to give you a quick heads up on the latest... latest bout of reality. UK and EU negotiators, who were supposed to be nailing everything down by July, according to Boris Johnson, who of course lied yesterday about Keir Starmer in the House of Commons, have not amazingly reached any agreement following, quote, intensified talks between the two sides. They've ended in London now, those talks, after 2 days, with the EU's chief negotiator, Michel Barnier, explaining that the UK is not showing readiness. That's very diplomatic and polite of him. It translates roughly as the first idea about how to find solutions. Here he is.
We have continued to engage sincerely and constructively in line with the mandate given to us by the Member States with the support of the European Parliament. However, over the past few weeks, the UK has not shown the same level of engagement and readiness to find solutions respecting the EU fundamental principles and interests. There is still no progress on two essential topics of our economic partnership. First, there must be robust guarantees for a level playing field, including on state aid and standards, to ensure open and fair competition among our businesses, all also over time. Second, we have to agree on a balanced, sustainable and long-term solution for fisheries with the interests of all Member States concerned in mind.
And there it is, fish. I've told you a few times in recent months, I don't know that I can spend the rest of my broadcasting career saying I told you so in various different ways, but there we are. Remember when we started shouting fish at the microphone, thought it was funny because that was the only thing that would be left by the time all of the other promises they'd made had been broken? And fish, of course, we shouldn't mock it. It's almost as big a part of the British economy as Harrods, the fishing industry. Ben Kentish is here, LBC's political correspondent. Do we know if Michel Barnier has tried believing more?
James, that's a good question. I think what you saw here really was, frankly, very little progress being made, as much as the UK government and to a lesser extent the EU still trying to talk up the prospects of a deal. Even one British government says as early as September, no progress, considerable gaps remain, big areas of divergence. This is the sort of language in both of those statements, and it seems we are no closer after extensive talks in the last month or two than we have been for many months, really, to getting that deal. What is clear is if something is going to be done, there's going to be a very fundamental shift on one side or the other, and there are no signs at the moment either side is willing to contemplate that.
Part of the problem being, as Marc Francois demonstrated quite perfectly in a letter he wrote, I think, to Barnier recently, was that they didn't really understand what the withdrawal agreement had agreed to already. And that is essentially, that's what's, it's almost Greek in its sort of tragedy, because it got Johnson over the line and talking about an oven-ready deal and pretending that he'd managed to sign off or set up something different from what Theresa May had failed to get through the House of Commons. And they all got so excited and caught up in the emotion of the moment that withdrawal agreement is, elements of it are legally binding. And the EU are not really prepared to step back from the bits that they'd already agreed. And that's why things are, that's one of the reasons why things are at such a stalemate.
There's bits in the political declaration that was agreed,
yes,
that the EU has since accused the UK of going back on. That part, of course, not legally binding the way the withdrawal agreement is. But, of course, the EU says the UK agreed to it nonetheless. And it is a matter of trust and honesty that they accuse the government of backtracking on. The government says it hasn't necessarily denied that, James, interestingly. It hasn't actually denied the suggestion that it has slightly kind of gone back on what was in the political declaration. Proven in government simply says it wasn't legally binding.
Happy days. Thank you, Ben. And of course, it's never too late for Michel Barnier to try believing a bit more. And that apparently is the way that you can pretend that reality is not reality and that the fishing industry is not smaller than Harrods in the role of the British economy. But there we are. Onwards and outwards. Rule Britannia. Britannia waves the rules. James is in Leeds to steer us back to mystery. Our question or answer, James?
It's an answer.
Oh, carry on. Is it an answer to the tangible benefits of Brexit?
I would love to talk about that, but no.
All right, carry on.
It's to do with the origins of stag parties and hen do's.
Yes.
There are actually two origins for the words, and they're both quite old. In Middle English, going back to the Tudor times, hen was actually the female name for any bird, not just chicken.
Sure.
So,
still, of course it is. Peahens, it still is in a way, isn't it? But I know what you mean. We need to be quite quick, so crack on.
All right. And so basically that's how it became a hen party, was associated with women. The stag party actually goes back to the 5th century in Sparta.
Yes.
When they would have a pre-wedding feast for the men.
Oh.
And they would go out and hunt and then come back. So it does.
Okay. Well, that works as well. So they'd go hunting for stags. So what came first, the chicken or the stag?
The stag came first. It's right. The oldest origin. But there are some origins of the hen party in the Middle East and in Asia.
Okay.
Hence the henna party with the tattoo of the female.
And is that might be part of the etymology as well? Henna, yes. henna into henna. I love that. What are your qualifications?
English language teacher.
Brilliant work, James. Have a round of applause on me.
Thank you.
Oh, great stuff. Seriously, those Spartans were serious geezers, I tell you. Man alive, that period of history is chilling. 12:55 is the time. Owen is in Chester. Owen, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on, Owen.
Yeah, okay, right. Well, I was listening to the discussion about opposable thumbs.
Oh,
And I heard you mention the panda.
I did.
And that reminded me of a book I read many years ago called The Panda's Thumb.
Okay.
Written by an evolutionary biologist, Stephen Jay Gould. And the reason that thumbs have evolved is basically there's a basic body plan that many, many, many animals share, in which we have these sort of five digits. And they've been adapted in many ways, if you can think of the fins of whales and dolphins,
of course, yeah,
and things like that.
Claws.
And so these have adapted and evolved over millennia to fit the lifestyle or the niche that the animal fits within. And so if you have, like with primates and things like pandas, you know, where animals start to use their forward limbs less or not as much for locomotion and more for other uses, that is why the evolutionary adaptation to having something that you can grip with, an opposable thumb, has sort of happened in some of these groups of animals. If you can think about the animals that spend less time on four legs, such as the apes and things like that, that is where you're more likely to have the evolution of the limb digit into something else.
It's a very helpful embellishment of the original answer. I was worried for a minute you were going to try and contradict the original answer.
Then we might have fallen out.
Quickly, though, I want to squeeze in one more after you.
Okay, very quickly. The interesting thing about the panda's thumb is it isn't a thumb, even though it's called that. It's actually a bone in the wrist that has evolved to take the place of a thumb.
And it serves the same purpose as an opposable thumb.
But it doesn't have the same genetic root
as an interesting example
of sort of parallel evolution.
Well, have a little round of applause on
and
me.
Cats, quickly. My cats like getting wet. Okay,
you're overstaying your welcome. Give them a round of applause. Thank you, Owen. Very kind. 12:57 is the time. Stephen Jay Gould, well worth reading. Big, but very early advocate of the medicinal uses of cannabis as well. Jago is in Reading. Jago, question or answer?
Answer.
Right.
It's to the question on the... Hello?
Yeah, I'm here, mate. I'm listening.
It's on the answer to the
Have you
Greenland.
Got the radio on in the background, Jago?
No.
Okay, carry on, mate. The Greenland question. And do you think I got it wrong?
Yes. It was used as a marketing tool, but it was used to get people to go there.
Yes.
Not for people to try and find a different place.
That's what I said, but I obviously didn't say it clearly enough, because it's not green, but if you told everyone it was green, then they'd all go there instead of going to somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we'll have a round of applause. I mean, to be fair, if my colleagues didn't understand my answer, then there's no shame in you not understanding it either. Sheila Fogarty still looks nonplussed. That's it from me. I think that's it from me for another day. Did we leave anything unanswered? I'll take the Greek round of applause, Keith, for democracy, please. Thank you. Cats, stag doos. And I'll take the round of applause for dragons as well. That was fairly obvious. How many stars had to go? And someone claiming that the answer, the digging a hole question, the question was when would it become uncomfortably hot? So the question was actually correct and completely definitive. So lots of rounds of applause all round today. And we all learned something new, I hope. Some of us perhaps more than others. That's it from me for another day. Still no... should we do a special mystery hour next week on the tangible benefits of Brexit? Or would that be... might be close to trolling you. I'll see you tomorrow at 10. Here's Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you, James. From 3 today, I've never knowingly spoken about Kim Kardashian on the radio, but last night she posted a really good tweet, I thought, about her husband Kanye West's mental illness. He has bipolar disorder. She talked of the need to understand better the behaviour that can result from mental illness. So let's talk about that at 3. I also want to talk about Scotland today, as the Prime Minister is there. Who can forget the speech David Cameron made in the shadow of Edinburgh Castle when he urged Scots to vote to stay in the UK? It was a full-on love letter. Different times, different man. Boris Johnson's message feels more like a tax bill than a love letter. He seems to be saying, as he takes Scotland out of the EU against its will, you need us. Do they?
On your radio, on Global Player, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.